From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week, we're talking with Columbia's mayor, Brian Treese, about our city's new Unified Development Ordinance. That's a document that guides so many important things about how our city grows and changes, from how buildings look and where they're built to how many parking spaces a new apartment building needs to build. The new code was approved last month, so let's hear from Mayor Treese about what it means for Columbia. I wanted to start at the very beginning. There's been a lot of talk about planning and zoning in our city over the last couple years. So what is a zoning code?
A zoning code is really necessary to protect the orderly growth of a community. And, you know, if you go back to the beginning of history as to how our cities were formed, all of them had some type of zoning code. It may be as simple as this is a town square, this is the village market, these are the homes. I mean, if you go back to Pompeii, if you go back to ancient Greece, ancient Rome, they all have some type of orderly growth centered around a city hall, a public marketplace, you know, all of these defined areas that really help plan the growth of a community. I mean, look at Washington, D.C. and how it's laid out as a wheel with the Capitol and all of the spokes that come off of that. And so really this zoning ordinance really helps preserve a community's culture, opportunities for housing, for commercial opportunities, for, public ideas.
So zoning really is how a community decides to organize itself, how it's going to look, how it's going to be arranged.
Correct. And the last time Columbia adopted a zoning code, it was in the 1950s. Our population was about 40,000 people. It was what was referred to as a Euclidean zoning code that had, you were either residential or some type of residential, R1, R2, R3, multifamily, or you were commercial, or you were office, or you were industrial and manufacturing. But you couldn't be all three of those. And so what we tried to do in the beginning of this process, going back to even 2008, when that Planning and Zoning Commission and the City Council asked a consultant to come in and look at how Columbia is growing and how can our zoning code catch up with the way we are growing, one of the solutions they recommended is what's called a form-based code, that we're not regulating the type of business that you can put there, but the form in which it takes. Mm-hmm. And that created what was called, at least in the downtown area, as an MDT, a mixed-use downtown designation, where you could have commercial on the first floor and retail, office on the second and third floor, and residential above, really to encourage the type of mixed use that we want to preserve a very diverse and kind of eclectic downtown community. But to be clear, that zoning reform code that the council adopted really affects the entire city.
It's interesting that Columbia hadn't really overhauled its zoning for 60 years.
Well, and that's a bit of a misnomer. We had overhauled it mm-hmm. in the form of variances and exceptions and what I call loopholes. In 1988, the city council adopted what was called a pyramid zoning that really allowed developers with existing downtown buildings with vacant second and third stories to put in residential uses. Mm-hmm. And the whole concept here was, in fact, if you go back in the 1988 minutes of the city council, they're asked, well, where are these downtown residents going to park? I mean, I was a sophomore in college at the time, and I thought, oh, how exotic to live in a vacant, you know, the loft phenomenon
right,
was just beginning
right.
to occur in other parts of the country. And I'm thinking, oh, this would be great. This would be ideal to live above Puckett's or, mm-hmm. you know, one of these vacant second and third story buildings. And the question that the city council asked was, where are these people going to park? And the response was, oh, no, these are doctors, lawyers, young professionals, nurses that work at Boone Hospital, maybe work at the university. They will come home at night and park in the meters. And when they go to work in the morning, there'll be plenty of time for the downtown shoppers to come in when stores open at 9 or 10, plenty of parking for everybody. And the city council rubber stamped it, never imagining that developers would come in and eliminate entire blocks of downtown, eliminate all commercial retail uses, and put in 1,000 residential beds with no parking.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have, you know, cascaded that zoning code to the point that we effectively had no zoning. We had open zoning in what was called the commercial C2 district.
So the zoning had changed piece by piece, but it hadn't been looked at holistically since
Correct.
The 50s.
Yeah, and so I think that was an important step to undertake. You know, when I was elected mayor 12 months ago, the downtown had grown so fast that we were at risk of running out of infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Running out of infrastructure, not just downtown, but with respect to our electrical grid, you know, in Southwest Columbia, one of our fastest growing areas, which really precipitated, you know, the discussion about these high voltage power lines and how do we push more power into Southwest Columbia so that we can free up more capacity to serve these downtown buildings. And from the soft infrastructure standpoint, you know, greater demand for police services, greater demand for fire services, greater demand for parking requirements. And so I thought it was important to come in, ask council to take a pause. We adopted a temporary administrative delay on new development in that downtown area until our zoning code and infrastructure could catch up with that demand.
This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari. Our guest today is Columbia Mayor Brian Treese. We're talking about the city's new Unified Development Ordinance and what it means for everything from downtown parking to infrastructure across the city. And so now the new zoning code has been approved by City Council. When does it go into effect? Is it immediate?
It took effect immediately 2 weeks ago, and the that temporary administrative delay expired naturally on March 31st.
Okay.
So we are open for business, and everybody has a level playing field now. You clearly know what the expectations are, and for a lot of developers, they'll no longer have to go to planning and zoning to get an exception or a variance or to get a plat reapproved or to get a change of zoning. These are shall issue permits. As long as you meet the expectations of this zoning code in terms of you know, the type of use that you're contemplating, how it looks and how it performs, and whether we have adequate infrastructure.
And what do you see as the major changes that people coming in to develop downtown are going to see with the new code as opposed to what existed before?
Well, I really don't want to limit it to just downtown, because the zoning code really affects our entire city.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things the city did by reforming this outdated zoning code was strengthened protections for neighborhoods and how commercial uses encroach on our neighborhoods. We increased parking requirements for large downtown development
mm-hmm.
that I think is going to benefit downtown shoppers, certainly downtown small business owners and employees, to make sure that the consumers that they rely on have a efficient and quick place to park and use their services.
Because now they need to put in half a parking spot per bedroom.
Correct.
Is that right?
Right. And before that, it was a quarter. So
okay.
One parking spot for every four bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
What council, and I offered an amendment and the council approved to double that parking requirement
mm-hmm.
On large apartment complexes over 20 bedrooms, 20 units, so that there's now a 50% ratio that if you create four bedrooms, you're adding two parking spots embedded in that structure or within, you know, half a mile of that facility to really meet the demand that you're creating by
mm-hmm.
having that. And we want that type of mixed use. The other thing I think that parking requirement does is again, we've kept the existing requirement for units under 20 bedrooms, is that probably encourages some developers to develop some smaller footprint, larger sized units
mm-hmm.
that are more appropriate for seniors, retirees, young professionals, you know, attorneys that may want the downtown experience but don't want to share four bedrooms.
Right, yes.
And you know, and finally, the last major component of that zoning reform is what I call a sufficiency of services test that requires the community development director to sign off that we have adequate and sufficient infrastructure, sidewalks, fire hydrants, electrical, water, sewer, before that development occurs, so that we're not in that catch-21 of having, you know, 400 bedrooms coming online and insufficient services to meet them.
Do you think that in the coming years we'll see fewer of these large hundreds of bedrooms developments going up? What does the new zoning affect that?
I don't think it affects it. And if anything, it's really allowed the market to catch up. Mm-hmm. We may indeed see fewer of those large units like that, but it won't be because the zoning is making them more prescriptive. We have an atrophy of students enrolling at the moment. I want that situation to improve. I want the university to grow. I want the vibrancy that comes with having, you know, 2,000, 3,000 new students every year, mm-hmm. and the pipeline that creates and the energy and the sales tax revenue that it generates for the city. But again, I think that temporary administrative delay probably headed off a potential housing bubble. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, you know, to the extent the city was subsidizing that that large student housing growth, we base our infrastructure investments based on future ratepayers. We then go take out bonds to pay for the new sewer and electrical upgrades. If those future ratepayers, i.e. the tenants that are renting those units that are using the infrastructure we're creating, do not materialize, then the rest of the taxpayers are holding the bag for mm-hmm. those infrastructure costs. So I thought it was appropriate that we take a break and let that infrastructure catch up, let the market settle. And I think we're seeing the effects of that.
One of the hotly debated parts of the new zoning code was neighborhood protection standards. And I hear a lot of talk, you know, I know a lot of people who live in Benton Stevens, and people are concerned about their neighborhoods and what they might look like in 20 years. What are the neighborhood protection standards and what do they mean for those more single house oriented neighborhoods?
Well, we made some dramatic protections for neighborhoods. And you know, I think this is important for a couple of reasons. For many of us, our home is going to be our single largest asset.
Right, of our life.
It's going to be our biggest investment. Having a paid off home in 20 to 30 years is going to be substantial. So it's important for government to protect the devaluation of those property values by the encroachment of other development. You asked the history of zoning, and one of the assets and benefits of having zoning is to prevent an inadequate investment that devalues your property right next door. We can all look to, you know, states like Arizona, where you might have a multi-million dollar investment, and then there's a gas station next mm-hmm. door. So we kind of looked at what is the orderly growth of, particularly in those neighborhoods around downtown, because we know when it's like a water balloon. When we squeeze the water balloon, it's going to ooze out other places. If there's no parking downtown, people are parking in the Old Southwest or in the right. Grasslands or in East Campus or in Benton Stevens. You know, we have parking audits that show negative excess capacity, meaning every parking spot is full, plus the no parking zones, you know, the yellow lines at the curb. And so I think the changes that we made downtown in and of themselves offer some benefit to those neighbors. But what we also did was, you know, prohibit the combining of more than two residential lots so that you can't come in and buy three houses, replat it, and build, you know, a multifamily apartment that is, you know, so out of scale with the surrounding bungalows that it really overshadows what we hope to preserve, and that is the fabric of a neighborhood and the opportunities for front porch conversations and sidewalks. We required houses in those areas in those neighborhoods to have a front door that faces the street. If you think about some of the existing lots that were there, they might be 50 feet wide at the curb and 150 feet deep. And at one point in the 1950s, a lot of them were rezoned from single family to multifamily. Mm. And the effect of that was you would have property owners and developers coming in and tearing down that single family house and then building a four-unit apartment with four doors down the side.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we've eliminated the front porch, we've eliminated the front door, and we've created what almost what I would call a broken tooth in the smile of that neighborhood. Whereas you used to have neighbors that would walk their dog at night, wave to people on the front porch. And while that sounds quaint, that also helps discourage crime. It helps neighbors look out for each other. It helps seniors age in place in the neighborhoods that they have lived their entire life. And it keeps cars off the street, which helps our fire trucks make it down Ripley and William and some of those, pretty congested streets more efficiently. And there's just a number of neighborhood protections that are embedded in that code that I think are going to stabilize and enhance that neighborhood experience for single family, but also renters.
And there are certainly people in these historic neighborhoods like East Campus, like Benton Stevens, who bought lots as investments to develop multifamily houses. What does the new code mean for them?
It doesn't affect what they're able to do with their property.
Mm-hmm.
They are all grandfathered in. And look, I understand there are homes in East Campus that have been rental properties for 30 and 40 years. A lot of times you have the owners living in those properties and they're renting out the basement or another unit in that in that property, appropriately so. And this zoning reform does not change that. It does provide some protections for those surrounding property owners that, by preserving some building height, you can't tear that property down and build a new property there that is more than 25% taller than the 24-foot maximum of the surrounding property.
Mm-hmm.
It protects your property from your neighbors, taking the driveway and turning it into a loading and unloading zone, or to paving the backyard with gravel so that you can pull in and turn your car around and park three or four cars there, which, look, this is a college town. We have students and we're creating there are a lot of rental opportunities, and a lot of them are affordable housing opportunities for students, particularly in light of the $1,200 sky rises that we're seeing downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have to be sensitive to those that have also made an investment in that community in the form of their home, their primary asset, and probably their nest egg.
This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari. Our guest today is Columbia Mayor Brian Treese. We're talking about the city's new Unified Development Ordinance and what it means for everything from downtown parking to infrastructure across the city. So do you think that the new code strikes a good balance between historic neighborhood preservation and the needs of developers in the housing market?
I absolutely do. And if you look at the process that we used to get there, planning and zoning had 11 work sessions on this proposed code. All were open to the public. They had 8 public hearings on the zoning code. The Planning and Zoning Commission voted unanimously to endorse this zoning code, including the executive director of the Columbia Board of Realtors and the past CEO of the Columbia Board of Realtors. Both sit on the Planning and Zoning Commission, both endorsed this code. When it got to the city council level, we had 4 public hearings on the issue, when only one is typical.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an extraordinary Saturday work session, then we had a couple extra meetings. And ultimately, this 7-member diverse city council also endorsed it unanimously. I think everybody would agree this was probably the most extraordinary democratization of a city council process they had ever seen. We had over 30 witnesses that presented public testimony that generated over 46 amendments to the zoning code that the community, the public, got to see the city council vote up or down each of those amendments. And the result, I think, is a balanced approach that meets the needs of developers and property owners and investors, but also balances the very real interests of neighbors and stakeholders in this process.
It is pretty extraordinary the amount of input from so many parts of the population that went into this.
Well, and I will tell you that I think we are cultivating advocates that probably make them better lobbyists for their industry, their profession, their neighborhoods, themselves. A lot of times, and I will tell you the approach that I took. When someone contacted me about the zoning code, they would say, "Oh, this is a infringement on my private property rights," or they would say the neighborhood protections don't go far enough.
Mm-hmm.
And my response to them was, show me what page, what section, what language that you're concerned about, and tell me how to fix it. And that process then forced people to put aside their preconceived notions that this is too onerous or not hard-hitting enough, mm-hmm. and look at a specific page and offer, well, now that you say that, I think we should have, you know, some limits on lights or building height. Then we would look at that section and figure out how it would fit, and that would generate an amendment that the general counsel's office would draft. In my 10 years of observing the city council and serving on city boards and commissions, I don't know that that's ever happened where someone would stand up at a microphone and say, I think we need an amendment on page 300 in section 21.B, and our legal team would craft an amendment that council would then consider. And, you know, a lot of those amendments were adopted that I think helped ameliorate some of the concerns from the community as to how we grow. We don't want to limit people's opportunity to invest in their property. If anything, I think this zoning reform protects their investment by encouraging higher quality investments surround them, because I do think it invites developers to come in and build the quality of projects that we hope and expect with the protection they need, that it's not going to be devalued or undervalued by someone putting up something inferior in the next 12 to 24 months next door.
Mm-hmm. And I, of course, have focused a lot on downtown because I live downtown and I work downtown and I love downtown. But what does the new code mean for the more outlying, growing areas like in the further southwest where we're just seeing a push of the border of the city?
Well, again, I think this sufficiency of services test is going to be the most dramatic impact to them, that we're now going to be able to look at developments as they come online. And, you know, in the product of this zoning reform is going to be that if the property you're developing is annexed into the city and there's adequate infrastructure in place, then you should have the framework that you need to develop that property. And hopefully this will be a more streamlined process that prevents people from having to go to planning and zoning and getting the exceptions that you need. You know, it used to be the only way to do something creative was to get a PUD, a planned urban development.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a framework in place that will encourage the type of mixed use and the type of vibrancy and diversity that we want.
So anytime you put new regulations into play or change them, it means, you know, new implementation processes and potentially new costs. So who is in charge of making sure that the new code is observed and put into place? And does that cost the city any different amount of money from before?
I don't know that it probably doesn't require an increased cost from the city's perspective. It probably requires some increased attention. The new zoning code really gives the community development director, Tim Teddy, some new authority and some new discretion to approve certain projects within the framework that council and the Planning and Zoning Commission have created. He has a great team, and I already know that they have formed kind of a four-person triage team, if you will, that looks at new projects and new plans as they're coming in. That pipeline, you know, reopened March 31st, and I know there are already some projects coming through the door. They are taking a close look at that, and it probably requires some attention to detail. There's a learning curve here, clearly, for both developers and property owners as well as city staff,
mm-hmm.
as to how they meet you know, the expectations of council and both the letter and spirit of that zoning code. One of the things that council has discussed, we know there's going to be hiccups in the first year to 18 months. Mm-hmm. At a minimum, we've asked for some report at the end of you know, the construction period, the end of 2017, if you will, and probably going into 2018, as to, you know, how many projects have come through, what were some of the inevitable, you know, interpretation issues, where we might need some additional clarity. What I want to do is give this zoning reform the chance to work.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's going to be problems along the way, and you know, as elected officials, I think we all have to be humble enough to say, you know, we missed the mark on this section, and while it says this, what we really meant was this, and to be able to look at that and create you know, the protections necessary that preserve the balance that planning and zoning contemplated, that the public participated in and agreed with, and that the council ultimately approved.
So it can sort of be amended or updated going forward?
Yeah, I mean, some call it a living document, and I prefer to think of it a little more as a structured framework, knowing that we can't anticipate, you know, the types of projects we ever, you know, thought of. I'll give you an example. I don't know that there's any definition for a food truck yard. What if we wanted to take an open space and allow these four-wheeled commercial kitchens to aggregate themselves on a piece of property where people can walk up and then go to a series of picnic tables? I mean, you see them in big cities, Dallas.
Yeah, they're great.
Right. And there's probably an opportunity for that. I don't know what zoning code that fits in. Is that industrial? Is it retail? There's not a store. We now have an urban storefront designation. There's no storefront. There's no bricks and mortar there. So, you know, we don't know what the next fad or next trend that the last thing I want to do is foreclose on Columbia being the being at the tail of those curves instead of creating those trends, and to make sure that we have a zoning code that is flexible enough but still is predictable without creating the types of loopholes and variances that got us to where we were at the beginning of this process.
Thank you for listening to Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. And of course, thank you to our guest, Columbia Mayor Brian Treese. He joined us to talk about Columbia's new Unified Development Ordinance, which was approved last month. If you'd like to listen to this show again, visit us online at kbia.org. You can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, where we're at IntersectKBIA. Our producers are Claire Banderas, Meg Vatterott, and Trevor Hook. Our music is Montana Skies. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection, here on KBIA 91.3 FM.